I'm David Schreiner-Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. I'm really excited about today's show. We're going to talk about something that I think is at the heart of almost every business problem today. My guest is Emmett Carriker, who has spent over 20 years in software development and technology. He's commonly known as Corky. Corky has seen it all, probably done it all, worked with all kinds of companies, different sizes, etc. I'll let you talk about your background a little bit, Corky, to get started, but I think it's going to be really exciting as we get into the meat of our topic today.
Right. Well, thanks for having me on the show, David. I am Corky Carriker, so I know that's going to get a few laughs. The long and short of my history with how I got where I am is that, like so many of us, I was born. The name, I'm the third. I'm Emmett Cecil Carriker the third, but everyone in my family was already using some variation of that name, so they thought for about a week and came up with the nickname Corky. So the very first thing I'm going to do is ask your listeners. My mother tells me that the name comes from the name of a movie star in the late 60s that would have been the name of the actor, not the name of a character, and that she doesn't remember who it was. So if anyone knows of a famous or popular pop star in the late 60s named Corky, I'm still trying to figure that out some 47 years later. Anyway, I began to get involved with technology because I had an older brother-in-law who worked to William & Mary as a physicist and was involved in early digital projects. And he would bring home some of the gadgets that he made, and they lit up and made noises and things, and they impressed me. And so then I was looking at those, and along comes Atari and video games, and I grew up in the 80s, so the birth of sort of technology as an entertainment device, and then computing as a potential possibility for home-based users. So early computers from Radio Shack were purchased with lawn mowing money. And by the time I was 15 years old, I worked in a computer store in the Fairfax, Virginia area, just outside of Washington, D.C. I grew up there. And that exposed me to government contractors walking into the store. Well, my job was to unpack computers and install software and solder RAM to them in those days. You didn't snap it in, you soldered it in. And one day a customer came in a suit, and I was there, and a lot of the sales reps were off at a training or something. So I looked at the owner of the store, and she nodded at me. It was a woman and her husband, and she said, go get them. So I went out there and I talked to this person, and I sold the first five computers that I ever sold in 1985 in my whole life. And those five computers ended up getting delivered by me with the help of a driver of age to bring me there to the Pentagon, to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And that's a pretty incredulous story, but that's where my love affair with computers began. And in those days, it was CPM. DOS didn't exist yet. And then Windows came, and DOS and Windows came out, and we switched from VisiCalc to Excel. And things like that were happening. WordStar became Microsoft. Word became what we have now online with Google Docs. And as business marched forward and technology marched forward, I went with it. I was in the dot-com bubble. I started and formed and sold a company and tech services to small and home office sized businesses in Nashville. I got married and had a baby and grew up and got bigger and better jobs working for the federal government, and then eventually moving to Tennessee to work for General Electric, Deloitte & Touche, giant Fortune 50 sized companies with huge infrastructure and bureaucracy, but all the time somewhere involved in technology. And along the way, starting to pick up what all technologists do, freelance work. And so in the early days of this, there were people congregating online and finding each other and doing work together to produce websites and some of the early pieces of the internet and the things that you know now as the open source movement. But overall, it didn't really become an established thing until the last 10 years or so. And people started to hear about virtual assistants and offshore teams and question them and whether they were reliable. And in the early days, I got to say, of the Wild West of it, they weren't. But in the modern world, it's evolved. And now, I just want to share something with you. My company, Sirius Digital Media, is what we call a micro multinational company. And I just want to tell you, I did a little bit of homework about how to define that best for your audience. And I found some very amazing information that, even though I'm familiar with the term and I've seen it come into vogue lately, and I can explain what it means, I was shocked to hear some of these numbers. So a micro multinational company like mine is a virtual organization that it really isn't constrained by boundaries or by geographical locations. The clients, the staff, the teams, the customers, the supply chain, all of this is distributed and might be made up of multiple companies that are connected in a hub and a spoke kind of a model. It's facilitated by technology. And then I learned a little bit more today that's more specific. The Household Bank Corporation did a survey in 2015, it looks like, and it said that in their report, which they titled The Rise of Micro Multinationals, the banking group categorized its members as essentially dynamic mid-sized companies that identify themselves as global in terms of how and where they operate, but which tend to be smaller and more nimble than traditional large companies, with a turnover somewhere between $50 and $250 million. So gone are the days of the freelancer and making $5 an hour working out of your garage to a point. Because the new version of that is that you're a freelancer who's working out of his garage running a $50 million company. And the way you do that is through a huge network facilitated by a huge network, the internet. Another interesting thing that I found were the top 100 companies that do remote work or have remote teams or distributed groups in some fashion. And just the top 10 alone, these are not, again, guys in their garage per se. This is Xerox and United Health Group and Dell and Aetna Insurance and American Express. That's the first five. And they go on down, in even ADP. Now, there's one that may touch a lot of your listeners' lives. ADP, of course, the payroll company, largely distributed and mostly virtual. So it's the modern way of doing things. It's more efficient. It can cost a lot less. And companies like mine serve in a space where someone who has their own micro multinational company might use us as their technology stack. Somebody that has a Xerox-sized corporation might use us to create a prototype. One of the examples I like to use when I'm explaining it to people is, say you're a major tennis shoe manufacturer, and you're making the hot new sneakers that everybody wants to buy. Well, everybody's into this Fitbit stuff and these smartwatches. Suppose you wanted a phone app created that was just for this one model of shoe. A highly specialized app that somehow spoke to the shoe. This is where a company like mine can come in and manage that specialized project, like that same company is already used to doing when they call in an advertising firm and they outsource the making of their next television commercial for the Super Bowl. There's a lot of trust that has to be built between the agency and the client, but at the end of the day, that's a specialized thing you only do once. So why would you build a broadcast studio and hire production engineers and cameramen and audio engineers when you can call an agency that specializes in that one thing? That's where my company fits, Sirius Digital Media. As a micro multinational, we can serve a customer anywhere in the world with any digital need. And the resources that come to that project are dedicated, but like a cloud, like cloud technology, scalable and shrinkable on demand. So if you have a project with a fixed time frame, we'll put together exactly the right team and deliver it. If you have a project with an indefinite time frame, a dedicated team can adhere to you and carry on. It's got so much benefit for the organization over hiring and building out internally, because you can also turn it off when you don't need it, that it's hard to imagine why it wouldn't have reached this point that now companies in the $50 to $250 million category are servicing larger companies like Xerox and a huge network of micro multinationals.
Corky, I want to add one other thing as background. I've had this podcast now for close to 2 years, and I've had a couple hundred guests on my show. And you and I met in this virtual space, and we've gotten to know each other pretty well, almost as if we were living in the same town, which is a very different way of developing relationships and doing business than we might have done 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago. And one of the things that I have heard from my guests and my listeners, where the theme of this show is, if you are in a place where you are stalled as a business leader or stalled professionally, what do you need to do differently to up the game and to create greater success and to really fulfill your dreams in a way that you hope is possible but you haven't been able to achieve lately? I've heard two things. One is the power and value of relationships in business and in personal interactions as well. So the power of relationships and the need to have a top-notch team to support whatever your idea is. And I think we're approaching a point in time where the way relationships and teams are developed and the way they operate is very different because of the internet and technology than it may have been a generation ago. And I think it opens up all kinds of new opportunities. It also opens up, frankly, new threats. So we have these micro multinational companies like yours, Corky, that can go to battle with the Fortune 500 companies quite easily.
So this might have a negative connotation for some listeners, and I apologize in advance, but I like to say that kind of what I have available for a customer is a mercenary army. And you know, you've called it the A team in some of our previous conversations, David. If you could have the A team, you've asked me, you know, to do any solution you need or problem, solve any problem you have, you know, how would that work? What would that look like? So let me just talk about what you just said. Interpersonal relationships, the nature of how we met and in a virtual space online in a community, became aware of each other initially, formed a bond around a problem you were expressing that I knew an answer to, while simultaneously I was in that same forum expressing some issues with my own business growth or strategy that I wanted to discuss with like-minded people. Here's the thing. Micro multinational companies think like this. There are five traits that micronational companies have. And number one, you identified it in what you just described about the way we met and came together, a global mindset, you know, often mirroring the mindset of the global citizen. I'm reading this, by the way, from a blog that was written on this report about the Household Banking Corporation's investigation into the emerging growth of micro multinationals. So this is straight from the Household Bank Corporation's report. And we can probably put a link in the show notes, I think.
I think that would be helpful for our listeners.
This is a great article that, you know, is from a banking corporation, so you can bank on that information. Insert a drum roll there. Micro multinationals have five following traits. Number one, global mindset. Often mirroring the mindset of the global citizen, thinking across borders, and having the confidence to innovate. So David and I were both on the internet. We didn't care where the other person sat when we first met. He could have been in any continent or country or town or village or wherever in the world. If he had good information for me and I had good information for him, we were going to share it. Thinking globally, acting locally, you know, you hear that, sometimes you see that bumper sticker. But global mindset, don't worry too much about if that person is in your town. In fact, it's been proven, I think, in statistics that in-person meetings are more wasteful a lot of the time than the time-shifted kinds of communication we can do online with tools like Slack or email or whatever. Number two, the second trait shared by micro multinationals is that they're intermediate. Typically, they have an annual turnover of around $50 million to $250 million. And why is that important? Because under $50 million, are they really a trustworthy partner for the likes of Xerox or ADP? That's questionable. They need to be stable. They need to be consistent. They need to be professional and, of course, talented. And then the $250 million cap. At some point, when you reach a quarter of $1 billion, you probably ought to rent an office and get a real mailbox. But that said, you know, somewhere between $50 million and $250 million is what probably could be identified or illuminated with a spotlight as actually being the sweet spot for custom services service providers and managed service providers. I'm just going to take a guess. I'm not an economist, but I'm thinking that they're intermediate sized because it's the nature of what these companies provide. That said, ADP, probably much larger than a quarter of $1 billion industry. and largely distributed. So global mindset, number one, intermediate-sized companies, number two. That makes them number three, agile. And while I think of agile as a software development process guideline, what they mean here is that these companies are agile and expand internationally early in their life cycle and with a clear strategy for each market. Now, I'm actually going to differ with them just a tiny bit. Yes, an agile micro multinational expands internationally quickly. They're founded on the idea that the borders don't matter, that the skills matter, the deliverables matter, the quality matters, and the price needs to be mitigated or managed as much as possible. But the clear strategy for each market, now, unless you only intend to market in one geographic area, whether that's your state or your nation or your planet, I don't know that I entered into my micro multinational with a clear strategy for each market. I only knew that I had a certain set of skills and the capabilities of a certain group of partners, and that we would then proceed to find the needs of our customers and serve them, as we all love to fondly quote Richard Branson, always take the job, always say yes, and then figure out how to do it, right? Well, we know what we're doing. We'll only take jobs that are within our, I guess, paradigm or skill sets. But the point is, those jobs might vary from a mobile application development project one time to a lot of graphical design the next time. And because all these resources and skill sets are related, we have all of them in our group. So being agile means, to me, being flexible and open to solving problems rather than selling widgets. So there are people out there who will sell you services as a website with five pages for $1,500. There's no mention of support. There's no mention of search engine optimization. There's no mention of social marketing. There's no mention of internet marketing. There's no mention of offline marketing. There's no mention. Just $1,500. And you'll get what you pay for. But if you actually sign up with an organization that's a micro multinational that's there at its premise to be agile for you and with you as you figure it out, while keeping that cost contained and predictable and low, that's really where the sweet spot is. And I think that's why they're intermediate sized companies. I think that's why they're fast moving. I think that the one thing I've seen so far in this list is having a clear strategy, because I think that strategy changes for every single client. But that's cool, because that leads to number four, which of the five traits multinationals, micro multinationals share: global mindset, being an intermediate sized company, being agile, is having a niche. So while I provide with my company at Sirius Digital Media broad spectrum internet related and software related services, that's still a niche, because we don't manufacture electric cars. And, you know, Elon Musk, another favorite, you know, entrepreneur of everyone's, I think, but mine especially, isn't as, you know, and so is Richard Branson. Now, these guys have achieved a different level. And boy, do they have distributed, remote, helpful teams. But they've got, you know, space companies and car companies. And, you know, this is Elon, space and cars and now batteries and solar and all the things that he's doing. Richard Branson with airlines and phone companies and record stores. But in each case, they're able to do that because they're macro multinationals at this point. Micro multinationals can do the same kinds of things and interlink the same kind of offerings by using the resources that they can scale and scale back on demand to deliver. So being agile in a niche, whether your niche is like mine, software services, or ADP's payroll services, or Xerox's copying stuff. So, not to belittle Xerox, I actually worked for Xerox too in the past, so I can speak as a former Xerox badge carrying employee. They make stuff that copies things, and I was pretty good at fixing it a long time ago. Let's see, number five, the last piece of being a micro multinational is to be tech savvy. And there you go, that's a great segue from I used to fix copiers when I was 19 to tech savvy, adopting new technology to foster the network and brand, capitalize on global nature of social media. So micro multinationals, individuals, giant corporations, really they all need to be doing these five things to survive in 2016 and into the future. Have a global mindset. Well, being an intermediate sized company, that's optional. Being agile in a niche and being tech savvy and using it to the fullest, which is what I really want to help companies do at the end of the day. Yes, we make websites. Yes, we make logos. Yes, we can help you refine your audio for your podcast. But what do you really want to do? Do you want to make more conversions to your course offering that you have online? Do you want to put a course offering online? Do you want to sell more of the widget you manufacture? Do you need more leads for your sales funnel? What's your goal and how can we help you get there? And the answer may surprise you. A client I worked with recently, David, came to me and wanted to build basically everything and the kitchen sink into a website. But when I went through a process of discovery with them that we do with all clients to get to better know what their actual business requirements are, we were able to cut away most of the kitchen sink, save a lot of time and aggravation and money on something that in the end wouldn't really have achieved the actual business goal. And it's that expertise that we bring, plus the production crew and mercenary army behind it of specialists and highly trained, highly capable people hand-selected all over the world to serve the project, that really makes this work. So there's five concerns that micro multinational oriented people need to worry about, in addition to kind of the five traits that they share. And these are also identified in the report by Household Banking Corporation. The report shares five concerns that are that establishing new partnerships is a bullet. And David, you and I talked about this briefly before the call, and I was explaining that for a company who understands outsourcing, this is pretty routine. When you have an outsourced team led by project managers that are generally your points of contact, the level of integration with which you get involved with them or don't get involved with them can vary in a couple of ways. But one important sort of rule of thumb is when you're trying out an outsourcing group or a specialized micro multinational to provide a service to you, you might want to give them a project that stands by itself as a test, or say develop a prototype for something you might be having an in-house team work on, but you need a rapid prototype created for a trade show or whatever reason. Use them for something that they can do on their own. As far as integrating them with an in-house team, companies like Xerox and ADP and the others that are on that long list of 100 top companies that do this, they're aware that they'll have to have some internal resources who kind of live and breathe working the outsourcing contract. They'll have to have a couple of people on the outsource side at the micro multinational service provider that live and breathe their business. And those people have to be tightly integrated and in close communication all the time. A lot of people want to, say, augment an existing team, hire some hired guns, they like to think of them as. I've heard that phrase. And throw them at it, and somehow this will solve a problem with a deadline or a scope creep issue or something. But what happens, in fact, is it's turmoil while the incumbent internal employees try to manage these new outsourced people who don't know a thing about the project and have walked in cold, have all kinds of new ideas and suggestions, but really are just expected to pick up the pieces and move on. And no one gets along well. These things end quickly. But the company that comes into it with their eyes wide open, number one, establishing a new partnership and looking at it as a partnership, almost like a new division that you've just acquired, and integrating them accordingly, it'll work great. And then if you don't feel like you can integrate them with your internal team for whatever political, bureaucratic, technical, or political reason that you may be faced with, then let them do things for you that wouldn't get done otherwise. Surely you have a project kicking around that you'd love to give the light of day, but really don't have the bandwidth for anybody on your team to take on. Outsource it, get it done. You might get new revenue, you might get whatever you were expecting from that product, but it will never happen if it stays on the shelf as an idea. Number two thing would be finding the right people with international experience. So internally, there may be some resistance to outsiders, especially outsiders in other countries. But I think that that's not as big a deal even a year after this report was created than it might have been in the past. At this point, I work with people in four different continents and five different countries, all of whom have higher and more advanced degrees than I do from universities of world renown. And because of the economics of Europe and India and Asia and the Philippines, they're far more affordable than their American counterparts. So outsourcing internationally makes sense for me in the same way that manufacturers go offshore sometimes for access to resources that would cost too much to import. I think Apple uses a special kind of sand in the glass for their products on their screens, and they have to go offshore for that. Sand doesn't exist in America. Well, this is similar. I can find the skills all over the world that a company might need they might not be able to find in their own backyard, and they don't have to come to their backyard to get those services. Then working capital, you want to make sure that the company you're going to partner with can operate. But that can be structured a number of different ways, and that's up to you and the service provider to establish and figure out to make sure that you feel comfortable with their ability to stay in business and provide you the services you need, and that they have what they need in terms of software licenses and things like that. So expense accounts, milestone-based billing, just making sure that you're in check with the company and that they aren't off somewhere too far in their garage and not micro-multinationaling enough. And then finally, cash flow and the visibility over their cash flows. So this can be more important when you're deeply integrated with a team. So I've had teams go on site with a client, and those teams actually had access to company expense accounts, often served as if they were staff of the company at functions, sometimes had to break out a company credit card to buy lunch, for example, with another vendor. So you want to make sure that there's open communication about cost, billing, expenses, and all of those things. You don't want to work with a micro multinational that won't give you access to your project time and billing along the way. You want to make sure that that discussion is always at the forefront so that you're not caught by surprise. And then finally, just supply chain efficiency is actually the last of the thing. It can be difficult working with multiple time zones, and that's probably the biggest hurdle yet to be overcome, but technology is closing the gap. And people that I work with in the industry who do things like the semantics of the internet, very heady stuff, are working on solutions that speed up how information transfers between services and people. So I think that's moving at a higher speed. I also think that the offshore people who work in different time zones from major markets, whether it's an American serving a company in China with consulting, or whether it's someone in Asia serving someone in Europe, or someone in India serving someone in America, whatever that star configuration might look like, there's a greater tendency for the larger micro multinationals to work in shifts and be available on the time zone of their clients. Everyone recognizes that you have to go where your customers are. So I think you'll find that that particular pain point is becoming less of a thing.
Corky, how significant a force do you think it is today for micro multinational companies to be a primary solution for a business that has hit a plateau?
I think it's the only solution for a business that, and that's hyperbole, right? So let me extrapolate on that thought. When you bring in somebody who can do something you can't do, your thing is going to get done faster. I can't make it any simpler than that. A peculiarity of me is that I live off-grid in a solar-powered cabin in the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina. I live off of spring water. I don't have traditional plumbing. I don't have traditional electricity in my home. I do have internet. We're using it right now. And I will happily elaborate in another show on how to live off-grid, not the point. The point is that from this perch in my beautiful mountain spot, I have service providers working with me of the highest quality in the world, all over the world. I have clients located in three countries. I really don't see borders. I don't have any limitations. My overhead is tremendously low. Our rates are extremely competitive, and our customers are very, very happy. So, you know, as a viable option, I don't think any company has any solution but to explore utilizing services of a micro multinational service provider. And that micro multinational service provider might be your payroll company. Please don't confuse the fact that I'm a software developer services company, whether that's mobile, desktop, web, or whatever, with the fact that that's all that's available. That's what you hear about on the news, you know, tech freelancers and freelancers for a lot less money.com and cheap freelancers that don't cost you anything.com. And that's all you ever hear. But the reality of it is that quietly out there, Household Bank Corporation and the U.S. government, another article I had pulled up to reference where I got the top 100 companies from. You know, these articles exist because 50 to $250 million companies exist in this space, and they might be making a product and shipping it. They might be making software. They might be providing accounting services. They might be providing transcription services for podcasts. A lot of it is technical. A big piece of what makes this compelling and possible is technology. So yes, the vast majority of service providers do in some way coexist with, utilize, or provide services for technology-based initiatives. But it could be anything. And don't be shocked if you look in your own company and realize some of the organizations you may already have as vendors are in fact micro multinational companies. Most of the retailers on Amazon from whom you buy all the things are micro multinational companies, who are people who have maybe one or two or five or 10 staff in America, a team that's in charge of their media production for the images for the products, a team in China or India or Pakistan or Indonesia or the Philippines making the thing, sometimes in the US, American-made products. But they're all over the place, and they're just a big connected network of companies spearheaded by one master of the thing that is the representative to the client, that ensures the quality and raises everything up to the level of being viable enough to be thought of as an emerging force by banking companies. So I think it's the only way to go.
Now, Corky, that being said, who do you know personally in this space who's doing remarkable work? What's a great example you can share?
Well, obviously, SiriusDigitalMedia.com. That's me. But nonetheless, like I said, I brought up the list of the top 100. I think Xerox is a venerable example. I think ADP is a tangible example because everybody's had an ADP paycheck at some point in their life. And you know how that works. And it's almost all online. And you never really ever met a person who works at ADP, but they're all out there.
Right. And nobody thinks about doing payroll himself or herself.
There's a tremendous number of companies that outsource like their telephone support, right? It's a good bet that when you go to most of the online websites these days that pop up a chat support person or a telephone operator who's standing by to help you right now, that those are virtual companies with worldwide networks of virtual assistants, or maybe a call center that is an outsourced service that is in of itself a hub of another micro multinational company. So how many are doing it? It's hard to say. A lot. It's an emerging thing. I've seen it mentioned in Forbes. I've seen it mentioned in Fortune. Companies that really stand out, here's the beautiful thing about it. Yes, I found a list of the top 100. Yes, they're mostly huge brand names. But as the list diminishes down into the hundreds, they're names you haven't heard of so much. And really, I think that's the point. My company, Sirius Digital Media, wants to help your business achieve its business goal. I don't come there to get my name famous. I go there to make your name famous. So I think that some of the world's largest and most successful companies in this space are ones you never heard of, who are quietly out there serving their customers and at most fishing around on LinkedIn for the next customer. And in that case, you're not fighting them. Now, I do have one. I did, like I said, some homework. Here's a great example of what I just said. Nationwide Surplus. I'd like a show of hands somewhere in the comments or on Twitter later of how many people have heard of this company, because I'm guessing not a lot have heard of Nationwide Surplus. But they're listed on commerce.gov, where the title of this person is the Secretary of Commerce, Penny Pritzker, in the Office of Public Affairs, in 2015, May, about a year ago, posts this article about micro multinational companies from the perspective of the U.S. federal government. And they actually anecdotally mentioned this one company as an example. Nationwide Surplus is just one example of a micro multinational. They are an Arizona-based worldwide trader of computers, peripherals, and surplus items. In the last few years, Nationwide Surplus managers started to use e-commerce platforms to reach a key source of untapped demand, international customers, who represent a robust market for older technologies. As a result, in 2014 alone, Nationwide Surplus grew by an impressive 120% and expanded its operations into a second warehouse, creating more jobs in Arizona. So a typical company started by probably one person on eBay as a hobby that grew into a multinational, two warehouse, employer in Arizona that notoriety large enough that the federal government uses them as an example. And yet you've never heard of this company. And my guess is they fall squarely into the $50 to $250 million category.
It's a great example. Corky, can you share with our listeners what you're working on now? What are you most excited about?
I'm most excited right now and always and forever, it's true, about finding out about you dear listeners. I'm a little bit of a ham. But the point is, I'm always seeking to find out from business owners across every kind of industry what really is creating hurdles in their business life. One of the reasons I'm drawn to your show, David, Smashing the Plateau, is, you know, a plateau is a hurdle, right? You've come up against this wall or this precipice, a plateau, a pinnacle, a place you can't get past.
Right. And it also means that you've had some success already.
Right. You know, you've climbed a mountain, but here you are at the top and kind of looking around and going, where's the next bigger mountain? Or is it a mountain? Or maybe I go scuba dive now. What do I do? Well, I like to be in those conversations. And I like to come at those conversations with 30 years worth of technology experience and awards from the President of the United States and Fortune 50s and fives and companies of less than five. And bring all that wisdom and experience to a conversation with an excited entrepreneur who's stuck and find that solution with them. Work through it and talk about it to death. Beat the horse. Pardon that. I own horses, by the way, and I hate that metaphor. But at the end of the day, really just go through this thing and figure out what's the next incremental step. Let's iterate, let's test, and let's figure out a solution that will solve this pain point for you. And chances are I can bring technology and automation and business intelligence and data science and all kinds of components of the modern landscape that you may or may not have in-house already and put together a solution that will hopefully shock you with delightful results.
Corky, if you could throw out a challenge question to our listeners around the topic that we've just discussed, what would it be?
I'll throw out a bounty for this one. Okay, this question's near and dear to my heart, and I'll even put money on it. If people come to my website over at SiriusDigitalMedia.com and fill in the contact form at the bottom of the page, on the homepage. You can't miss it. It says, are you ready to get serious? If you're ready to get serious about telling me the number one thing you wish you could fix, change, or add to your business that technology could help you do, if only you knew how. And maybe you're not sure what the answer is. That insinuates you already think, well, there's a way to do this with technology and I know how. But I have a problem. I need more leads. I have a problem. I need a faster sales cycle. I have a problem. People are bouncing from my website when they come on mobile devices. And I don't want that to happen. That's bad. I need to add 15% to my bottom line, and I'm looking for a new way to do that, a new channel, but I don't know how to do things on the internet. I've always sold offline. Whatever those things are that are eating at you at night and you wish you could solve, you drop that on me via the contact form over at SiriusDigitalMedia.com. And if you become a customer of one of our monthly managed service packages that are pretty amazingly affordable, and we'll be happy to discuss how that works at any time. If you come to my website, put in your business pain point, I'll give you $500 off a month for life of any of our managed services matrix products that I can show you that are affordable and bring entire technology teams of highly specialized people to your problem to solve it for you.
I'm going to actually throw out a broader challenge to our audience and ask you if you would join me in responding to them, Corky, by saying, whatever idea you have that is keeping you up at night, where if you could solve this problem or this pain point, you would definitely get a return on investment. What is that pain point, and what kind of A team would you need to be outsourced to be part of your overall team that would help you solve that problem? If you throw this question out on Twitter, Corky, would you be willing to join me in answering these questions?
Sure. Just either, I'm sure this is going to go to your audience, so most of these folks hopefully are already following you on Twitter. And if so, then just have them direct a message towards the podcast or the hashtag or your Twitter handle. Our Twitter handle is at Serious Folks, F-O-L-K-S. We're the serious folks that are here when things are going a little silly with your online presence, or you don't want to look silly when you launch your new one.
And our Twitter handle is at TendSP, T-E-N-D-S-P. So if you include both Twitter handles in your question, Corky and I will respond.
We'll both see it.
And as you could hear, Corky has been around the block a few times, so his specialty might be software development and digital, the digital space, but he knows a lot about what it takes to get a business to thrive in the current environment, and we'd be happy to answer your questions.
Absolutely, 100% of the time. Like I said, my favorite thing in the world, and I meant it, is to talk to excited entrepreneurs who have an idea and see if we can figure out a way to bring that idea to life in a way that makes sense, in the right steps, and without going down rabbit holes over ideas that we haven't tested or checked along the way to make sure they were viable.
So post your questions on Twitter at TendSP, at Serious Folks, and we will respond.
Love that.
Corky, thank you so much for coming on Smashing the Plateau today and doing a deep dive in this issue of micro multinational companies. I think it's a really exciting...
It's the place to be.
Yeah, I think we're on the cusp of a lot of exciting things that are happening in the world, and I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it. My guest today has been founder and CEO of Sirius Digital Media, Corky Carriker. Thanks again, Corky, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, David. I'll look forward to answering questions for all of your audience.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. What has your experience been getting help when you've hit a plateau? What would you like to learn through this podcast that would give you the support you need? Let's continue the discussion. Connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter. And please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. It would also help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious. I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.